This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to Peter Swanson. He has a new book called The Kind Worth Killing. It's out from William Morrow and all your bookstores now. There's a lot of people on the back saying nice things about it. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Are you friends with Joe Hill?
No, I don't know Joe Hill.
He's one of
not my friend because he wrote a nice quote for me. But
he did. He must have liked your book.
Yeah.
You really have a great way of writing. I really enjoy the way you write.
Thank you.
It's just, and it's different. It's very different from other writers, I notice. It's very clear and concise, and it really grabs you right away. That's a sign of a good writer to me.
Thanks.
It's hard to describe to you what I mean by that, other than the fact that I can pick your book up and just get so lost in it.
Yeah, I don't know, writers get their style by, I guess, absorbing over the years all the stuff they read, and you eventually sort of develop your own style. And when I was younger, it was definitely like whatever I was reading then, I was copying it. I think a lot of writers do that, and so I don't exactly know where my style comes from, but I do read a lot of older books, like sort of 50s, 60s. Pulp novels, American pulp writers, and also Golden Age detective writers, and there was, I do like that kind of more clear style,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, I guess, you'd call it lyrical or poetic.
And you're very, very good with dialogue, which is, to me, I mean, I read a lot of books, and sometimes the dialogue is lags, but the way you, I look forward to your dialogue.
Great, thanks.
I haven't read your other books, but the other one about the girl having a...
The Girl with a Clock for a Heart.
That is such a great title. I'm curious what that one's all about. I haven't looked into it yet.
It's not science fiction or steampunk. It's not literally A Girl with a Clock for a Heart, but it's definitely more of a noir novel, and the title comes from a piece of dialogue where sort of female character talks about herself as she has sort of limited time. I mean, you have to read the book to understand why, but she refers to herself. It's kind of a, she changes personas, and when she talks about that, she says she feels like she has a clock for her heart that's just ticking down the amount of time she has left to pretend to be the person she's pretending to be. So, and then when that came up in the dialogue, I was like, that sounds like, again, it sounds like a pulp title from a 1950s book. One of my favorite writers is John D. MacDonald. He has a couple books, like The Girl in the Brown Paper Bag, I think is one of them. And
mm-hmm. Oh, Colors.
Watch and everything. So it kind of sounded like a pulp novel, so I liked it for that reason. And, of course, you come out with that title, and then everyone's like, or a lot of people wrote, Peter Swanson's trying to cash in on Stieg Larsson's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, no, I'm not ripping that off. I'm ripping off something entirely different. but whatever.
Well, tell people a little bit about the book. The plot a little bit.
The Kind Worth Killing is, it's about two strangers who meet in an airport bar and wind up taking a flight together. And they kind of make this deal to tell each other the truth. And that's partly because they're on a plane and the male character, Ted Severson, talks about that there are rules of airport bars or rules of airplanes where, you're allowed to open up to someone because you're never going to see them again. So in the course of telling each other the truth, he basically tells this strange woman on the plane by the name of Lily that he wants to kill his wife, who is unfaithful. And instead of being horrified, she responds that she thinks it's a good idea, and that's basically the premise of the book, and
mm-hmm.
it goes from there.
Right. It's hard to talk too much about the book because you'll give too much away.
Yeah.
Although I love the way you write limericks. Do you have like a whole book of limericks that you've written?
I took that trait. I don't, but I write poetry.
Oh, do you?
I do. Yeah, yeah. I like to think of myself. I'm sort of a failed poet, but I wrote poetry for years and years. I don't write it so much anymore. But I did write for a long time.
What makes you a failed poet? You tried to write a book and it didn't get published? Is that a failed poet?
So on a basic level, and I'm kind of half kidding here, but on one basic level, for years I wrote poetry and put together manuscripts and sent them out to publishers, and no one was interested. So then that level failed. But also as a poet, I just ran out. I ran out of ideas for poetry and I just stopped writing them, and that's where I am now. I mean, maybe I'll go back one day, but in some ways it was sort of my first love as a writer.
Did you know that Entertainment Weekly was going to write such wonderful things about this book?
I heard that it was going to be in Entertainment Weekly as a sort of preview of the upcoming year, so I was thrilled. It's a big magazine, and I was like, oh, that's great. And then I think the day it came out, I looked online and it wasn't listed there, and I was like, oh, I guess they skipped it, because for whatever reason there wasn't, I didn't see the main article, that I was the sort of title of the article.
Mm-hmm.
So then when I saw that, I was like, oh my god,
that must have been a thrill to see that. I mean, and that's how I got started reading the book, because I read that and I thought, oh, now that sounds interesting, and then now I pursued to read the other one, The Girl on the Train, which I'm reading now. So, and it's so different. I mean, she's got such a different writing style, and that's the beautiful.
I just read that book actually. I'm doing an event with her, so if I'm doing an event with someone, I definitely try and read their book.
Where does the idea for The Kind Worth Killing come from? I mean, are you sitting somewhere and it just suddenly hits you? This is what I want to write about, or where did it come from? There's a lot of unfaithful people in this book.
I know. You think my life is pretty seedy. My life is very dull. I think most writers' lives are pretty dull because you're in the house most of the day. But this idea actually, I can sort of date it back 30 years, strangely enough. I was like a young teen and my parents had friends over. And one of those friends, he was a businessman, told the story about he'd just come back on a long flight, and this woman had sat next to him, and she told him like her entire life story, including all these private, intimate details. And he kind of told this story, and all the adults at the party or whatever were saying, it's so much easier to talk to a stranger than it is to talk to someone you're close to. And I don't know, maybe I was 13 or something, and it was just one of those stories that I've remembered ever since. I guess it seemed radical to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I always think of it whenever I get on a plane by myself. I think about, I sit down and I think about that story when someone sits next to me, which is why I'm the one with the book open on my lap and the headphones on, hoping I don't get stuck in an 8-hour conversation. I've always thought of it. And then one day it was just, it became this sort of premise. I had this sort of what-if question. Most books come out of these what-if questions. What if a man and woman sat next to each other on a plane and told each other all their darkest secrets? And what if the man said he wanted to kill his wife? And then what if the woman said she'd like to help?
Right.
And that became
sort of very similar to Strangers on the Train. And I thought,
then I was like, oh, this sounds great. And then I was like, oh, well, that's kind of already a book.
Right.
A very famous book, Strangers on a Train, by Patricia Highsmith, and a very famous movie.
Which they're going to remake, I see. I read yesterday.
Yeah, that was a strange one. I'm not one of those people who gets angry at remakes, but seem like that's a pretty great film.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I thought about that, and I realized that in Strangers on a Train, that's a lot more about one man stalking another man. And it's sort of about coercion, and then it becomes a lot about guilt, that he can't kind of shed this guy he meets who suggests this murderous swap. And my book was a lot more about like-minded people meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So a little bit more like kismet, I guess. And then I thought, it kind of veers off that original idea pretty fast. So.
Right. Now, how many books have you written besides this one and the girl we the one we talked with a few minutes ago? Are there more?
Written or have I published?
Yeah. Oh, well, there's more. There's a lot you've written and haven't published.
Yeah, this is my second published book.
Oh, okay.
So my first, my debut came out a year ago. That was Girl with a Clock, and then this is my second book. And then prior to that, I'd written.
Because you obviously have so much talent. I'm like, where has this man been? I mean, it's like, I mean, that's what goes in my head. I think, well, there's so much talent here. You wonder where he's been all these years. I guess
writing bad poetry,
writing bad limericks.
You know? Yeah, right. Wandering my tongue.
There's something to me. I mean, maybe it's me, but I love to read limericks. They're supposed to make you laugh a little bit. But it's just fun. It's just fun stuff, you know. And it's like reading quotes. I love reading quotes from famous people. These really deep quotes.
I like both. I like limericks too. No, not many people write limericks anymore, but you know who does? It's very interesting. Is one of the Coens, the filmmakers, Joel and Ethan Coen. One of them actually is a writer, and he wrote a whole book of limericks.
Really?
Yeah, it's called. I don't even remember what it's called. Yeah, Joel Coen or something. He wrote a book of poetry called "The Drunk Driver Has the Right of Way,"
mm-hmm.
and then he has a whole section of limericks, and they're really pretty funny, and they're very dirty. I mean, it's really hard to write a non-dirty limerick. There's something about that form.
Interesting.
Now, adjusts it.
Are we supposed to believe this is Lily on the cover here?
I don't know who that is. I don't know if it's Lily on.
Maybe it's your wife.
it's not my wife either. I do have a wife, but that's not her on the cover.
I don't know what made me say that, but it just seemed. You know, it's interesting. They put these people on the cover, and you're like, who's the person? And you're reading the book, and you say, I have to figure it out. Figure out what's going on, because you always think to yourself, well, the cover's got to be part of the book. You know, it's like when you read, and you mentioned Nancy Drew in your books a lot, I noticed. Of course, I grew up reading Nancy Drew, and she always had these pictures in her books, and you're always wondering, like, when does that picture take place in the book?
Well, covers are funny because, I mean, everyone's been, you know, sometimes covers don't reflect the book, just like movie posters don't always reflect the book, and, you know, I think covers always reflect the book that, you know, the editor wished you'd written or the producer of the movie wished you'd made. But I like the cover. I was thinking, who is that? And then there's a brief scene early where Ted comes off the plane and his wife is walking up the stairs ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, maybe it's that scene. So
maybe it is. It's like I read Gone Girl when it came out, and yep. I thought Gone Girl was phenomenal. I just love the way it's written, and there's very controversial things about the ending, whether the ending was bad or good. But look at how much talk there is about that book. I mean, it's like everybody has an opinion about that book and the movie. Now, watching the movie, I just felt like it was a totally different thing from the book, but that, you always feel that way. But I can imagine they're going to make a movie of this book. What do you think?
So there's an option out on it, which is, you know, someone has purchased the right to try and make a movie over the next 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, as I'm well aware, there's many more options than there are final films, so I'm not...
But it is possible, though.
Oh, yeah. Someone's actually writing the script, so...
Oh, really?
But that's well before... I mean, it's not in pre-production. Pre-production is where they sort of have the money together and they have a cast and they're going to try and get it made. I mean, this is in the sort of hoping to get it made. I think, you know, I mean, if it gets made into a movie, that's great. I'm not holding my breath.
So, I assume you're working on your next book.
I am.
I can't even wait to read it just because I like your writing style. I mean, how many writers can you say that about? You actually sit and, I mean, you read a book and it does something to you after you're done it. I mean, it changes you a little bit. At least it does for me. I don't know how you feel, but there's certain books that you just, when you're done reading, you're like, I can't wait to read something else by this person. Will you keep the same style of telling it from different characters' points of view? That seems to be very, very popular nowadays.
Yeah, My first book was in the third person, and this new one, as it stands now, jumps from sort of character to character, but not first person. Although it's essentially that type of narrative style that seems like first person. I mean, it's kind of within the heads of the characters, but I don't want to do the same. I don't want to do the same thing every time. It has become popular, and it's a and you can do a lot of nice sort of trickery with it, especially if the narrators are slightly unreliable, and especially if they wind up telling the same scene twice. You can do a lot of fun stuff with that. But I would never imagine I would do that with every book. And I like, just for the same reason I wouldn't only read books that are like that or only read books in first-person narration. Like, I definitely like both.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. When you read an author's book, you want every book to be different. You want every book to have its own distinctive style. You don't want to say, well, that reminds me of... I mean, there are authors out there who seem to write basically the same kinds of book each time. They just change the... I mean, like, I think of, like, Lisa Jackson, who writes these really disturbing serial killer books, and she does it every time, and people seem to love them, but, I mean, I get tired of it after a while. You know, there's only so much you can do with a serial killer.
I agree. I think a lot of series, there's many series that I've started and read, enjoyed, and then, you know, at one point you just feel like you've read this. It's the same story retold, but people love that. I mean, think of television. I mean, think of the most popular shows on television.
CSIs, I mean, how many...
They're kind of the same story over and over again.
To me, it gets boring. It doesn't sustain my interest a lot of times. I mean, even with Law and Order, it's the same kind of shocking things that happen every week, and it's... Or they rip it from the headlines, some really perverse thing that's happening, you know, and they seem to... And I don't know where the interest is, but I guess...
I think it's... I get it. I mean, I think some of it is... In a weird way, even though it's violent, it's comfort food. It's like, I'm going to settle down to a Law and Order, and I know what I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well done. I mean, there's a lot of skill, obviously, to that. But there's not a whole lot of surprises. But, a lot of people like that. They like to know, they want to know what they're getting when they open.
I think CSI's in its like 16th season, and you think to yourself, how in the heck has that show lasted that long?
People still watch it.
And it's, even though the same main characters have been changed over the years, you
know,
they're not the same people, and yet people still stick with it. It's like you said, it's comfort. It's like Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. You know, they're there every night. You can watch them every night. Do you watch a lot of TV?
I do. Yeah, I do. I mean, it's a... I watch, I don't flip it on and flip around too much. I mean, I do sometimes, but I have a lot of, I seek out shows and then I watch them, you know, like I just watched The Fall, which is serial killer show. And, you know, I watch things, you know, I hear about things. So I there's a ton of great television.
And the guy in that, I think, is the guy in 50 Shades of Grey now, the movie.
Yeah, Jamie Dornan. Yeah, he plays the serial killer in The Fall, and Gillian Anderson is the detective. But
I've seen the first season. I haven't watched the second season. I think it just came out. But
yeah, I just watched the second season, so I just watched that through Netflix.
I hope it's as good as the first one. But you always want it to be as good as the first, you know. But can you watch TV while you're writing?
Oh,
or is
no.
it too distracting?
Oh, no. No, when I write, I have to be
distraction
free.
Do you start early in the morning? I mean, is it an all day thing with you with writing?
Nope, it's just a morning thing, and I don't start particularly early. But I do. You know, I have an afternoon job. I still work 50% at the company I've been at for like 17, 18 years. I'm a project manager at a nonprofit here in Cambridge, Mass. And so I get up in the morning and I write for 2-3 hours till about noon, and try and get about 500 words in every day if I can. And if I'm going, if you know, I'm in the middle of the book and things are going well, I'm definitely writing 500 words a day. And then I go off and work in the afternoon, and that's it. Sometimes at night I go back and read what I wrote that morning, but in general, if I do 500 words, that's good for me.
I must admit, reading this book, and I can't go into much detail, but right in the middle of the book, I was like, what just happened? And I had to, it was so unexpected, and I thought, oh my, I don't know that I'm going to like the book from here on out. You know, it was one of those, right, those moments where you think, oh, did he just ruin the whole book for me? You hadn't, but it felt that way, and I thought,
yeah.
Well, where do we go from here? It's like that when they, well, I don't even want to say that because I might give something away. But
it kind of pulls the rug out from under you and what you expect the whole rest of the book's going
to
be.
Right. Did you do that on purpose, or was it just something that needed to be done, did you think?
Yeah, I mean,
we really can't talk about it, can we?
No, I did it on purpose. I mean, and I was a little worried about it, but I was like, well, doing it allowed me to imagine a second half of the book that was like, oh, okay, that could be really interesting. And then I was like, okay, let's try.
I think I really liked the person. I think that's what the problem was.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, I didn't want what happened to happen. So that's all I can say. But when you read a book, you get invested in certain characters. You grab onto certain characters. I mean, I do anyway.
Of course.
And I remember in Lisa Scottolini's books, her first book had this really, really cool gay character who was really funny, and she killed the character off. And I've never forgiven her for it. Never.
Uh-huh.
And there are certain characters that, I mean, you look at the Alex Cross series with the old grandmother, you can never kill her off.
Right.
She's too important to the series.
Right.
So if you do that, you risk losing a lot of people. So what do you do? I mean, do you do what's right, or do you do what people want you to do?
It's funny. I mean, I think you have to do what's right, and, you know, it happens on TV shows, too. I think TV shows are now kind of coming up with these major deaths, or, you know, they do it in The Walking Dead. They obviously do it in Game of Thrones and Good Wife. I don't watch that one, but I've heard it. I think they killed a major character on that. And, you know, it's funny. People get, fans get angry, and then
then they accept it.
And they say, I'm not going to watch anymore, but you know they do.
Yeah. They, of course they do, because they want to see what's going to happen next. It's like,
they're right. They're hooked. I mean, it's one of the things that I think good fiction can do, or good TV or whatever. If you're hooked in, you lose a little bit of control. You're in the sort of artist's grasp, and they hold your emotions, and then they can toy with you. And if they do it well, sometimes it's upsetting, but it is just fiction. I mean, if they can make you care about someone and then kill that person off.
And the trend nowadays in writing really long books, I mean, your books are, this one's just over 300 pages, so it could never be considered what long, but there's a lot of books that are really long nowadays, and like, you know, 600 pages sometimes, and you think, my goodness, how do you sustain a plot for 600 pages if you really got to tell an interesting story?
Yeah, I like short books, especially genre novels, and
Philip Marlowe books and things like
those kind of like sustain, you know, that it's got a lot of pace and just sort of moves you through the story. I don't I love a book you can read in a couple, two, three nights or something like that.
Or like James Patterson, you can take it on a plane and read the whole book on the plane, you know.
Right.
You basically can. I mean, there's some fast reading, you know.
Yeah, or Robert Parker used to be like that, who wrote the Spencer books. I mean, those, I could read those, just sit down and read an entire book. I don't mind that. I mean, there are definitely books that earn their length. And, you know, there's nothing, I mean, if you're in the middle of a great book and you're loving it and it's 600 pages, or if it's Stephen King, it's 1,000 pages, I mean, I guess at that point you don't care because you're into the book.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You're more of it to read, but I, you know, I don't mind I guess I like the length that I write at. I mean, which is about 100,000 words or 300 pages.
So I wonder what 500 into 100,000 words, how many days would that take you to write?
Depends on if I work on the weekends. But, I don't know. It takes me about 9 months, a little under a year.
So what happens if you're like, say you're out with your wife and you suddenly get all these ideas in your head about what to do with the plot. Do you go home and continue writing?
No, I don't. So, every once in a while I have an idea and I'm like, okay, I should write that down or I'll forget it. But the real truth is, I feel like if it's a good idea, I won't forget it, and that it will stay in my head and I'll keep sort of thinking about it. So it becomes a little test, you know? I'm like, if it's really good, I'm like, oh, I just keep thinking about it, and then I don't need to write it down. So that's the same with, like, having an idea about a story or a book.
Yeah.
If it's a good idea, I just keep picking at it, and I don't write it down.
It's like when you're out and you see something you really want. What I do is I do a test. I'll be like, if I keep thinking about it for days and days, I'll go back and buy it. If I don't, then I'll just move on.
That's exactly what I do with ideas, because I think I don't have a shortage of ideas. I have a lot of ideas for the book I'm currently working on, and I have a lot of ideas for other books, and you know, sometimes they pop into my head, and yeah, if I forget it, it was no good.
And writers seem to be very jealous of their ideas, or very protective of their ideas, I should say, that somebody else would steal the idea and write a book. Are you like that too?
I don't know. I mean, I never thought that much about it. I'm more protective in the sense that, like, I don't like to talk about stuff I'm in the middle of working on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people to. I don't know, but it's not that I'm.
Are you afraid somebody's going to say, "Well, that's a terrible idea," and move on to the next book or something? You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I have my wife for that, but
I mean, if you ever get excited about something and you tell your friend about it and they just act like they're totally uninterested, it's the weirdest feeling in the world. It's like, how can you feel that way? I'm so excited about it. You should be too, you know?
Right.
You can't be, though. Everybody's excited about something different, you know? They have what they're excited about. You have what you're excited about.
Right. So ultimately, yeah. And that's why, as a writer, I mean, you should do the idea that you're excited about.
The ultimate is to just read a book that you really enjoy and tell your friend, and they enjoy it too. That's when it really feels really great, because I have a friend like that. She'll ask me, what's good to read, and I'll tell her, and she'll get into it as much as I get into it. Really exciting for me.
Yeah.
It sounds like a stupid thing, but you know what? It really is one of the little thrills in life that make me happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what's the last great book you read?
I just read, I'm kind of on a Patricia Highsmith jag, who wrote, of course, Strangers on a Train, because I was writing a piece about her in connection with this book for.
She's the same one who wrote the Ripley series, right?
Yeah. I read a book by her called Deep Water, which it's set in the 1950s in the suburbs of New York. And I think it was kind of the inspiration for Gone Girl, but it's about a really, really unhappily married couple, and it just turns murderous, and it was just. She was great at the slow burn thriller. Like, she just builds up this sense of dread, and you're just waiting and waiting. But it was great. It was really well written. So I've been reading a lot of her, and I did read the book of the moment, that The Girl on the Train, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm reading that. I'm in bed last night reading that, and it's just eerie. I hear sounds around me outside, and it's getting me, like, spooked. I love that feeling of being warm in your bed, and you hear these noises, and you're a little scared, and you don't know what the plot of the book's about yet. And I love that. Or when it's raining outside and you're reading. I love that. I don't know what it is about rain that's so relaxing sometimes.
Well, one of the things relaxing about it is if you're home, you don't feel like you're wasting. You don't feel like you need to go out.
Exactly.
That feeling of, like, yes. You know, it's a snow day or whatever, and you're just, you just read all day.
So why is it you only write in the mornings? Is it just a matter of time, not having the time in the afternoons?
Well, but it's also the best time to write for me. I just operate better. But I did used to write at night when I worked full-time. I didn't have the mornings, and I couldn't do the early morning thing that, like, some people do. I don't wake up right away. So I did the, like, come home, eat dinner, and then go to my computer and write for a couple hours then. And it was okay, but I much prefer to write in the morning.
I mean, you write so much like a really experienced writer, like you've been writing for years and years. It's amazing. I mean, when you read this book, you think, well, this man knows what he's doing. He really knows how to, like, tell a good story. So, I mean, you must have a lot of things you haven't published yet.
Well, I mean, I have been writing for years. I've been writing poetry, and then writing short stories for years, and then in about 10 years ago, maybe it was longer, maybe it was 12 years ago, I thought, I'm going to try and write a book just to see what that's like. To see if I could do it. It's such a, I was really nervous about writing it just because it's so long to write a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried it before and failed, given up after 30 pages. So I had an idea for a sort of kind of classic whodunit, and I plotted it out. I knew what each chapter was going to be, and I just sat down and I wrote it. And that feeling when I got to the end of that book was so great. I mean, I just felt, I really enjoyed writing it. It was actually one of the more fun writing things. I mean, just because when you're in the middle of the story, when you sit down to write, you kind of, you know where you're going. You know where your next couple pages are going to be, and you just kind of do it. I loved it, so.
You have to be open for criticism when you write, too, because you're going to get it. I mean, it's like when you write something that maybe doesn't sound quite right, and you read it in front of other people, and you suddenly realize, well, that doesn't sound quite right. You have to be fearless, I would think.
Yeah, I have a pretty thick skin. I mean, I think most, I've had a fair amount of rejection as a writer. I mean, I think, what can you do? I mean, the key is not to get too excited about the good stuff because, if you get a nice review and then, or, today you're saying all this great stuff about me, which is amazing. But
that's true, that's why.
I try not to let that swell my head, because if I let that swell my head, then the next time I hear someone say...
But it's obvious you have talent. I mean, one only has to read this book.
Well, I'm sure it's not obvious to everyone. I mean, it's a matter of opinion.
I think, well, in my opinion, once they read this book, they will know you have talent. I mean, they may not like the story. I can't imagine they wouldn't, but they may not like it, but the talent is still there, no matter if you like the story or not, to me, don't you think?
I'll go with that because you're saying good thing. But
just because a lot of times when you pick up a book you're reading it, maybe it's about China and you have no interest in China.
Yeah.
And you just don't like that it's about China. But uh-huh. You still can say, well, I know they know what they're doing. This is good writing. But I'm not interested in the subject matter. A lot of people would say with 50 Shades of Grey, I'm not interested in all these sexual kinky things in a book. They don't like that, but they still can say it's still written well.
Which I heard it wasn't, but I didn't read it.
I have to admit, I read all three and I enjoyed all three. Would I say they're greatly written books? No. But would I say they kept my interest? Yes, absolutely.
Well, they did. They kept a lot of people's interest, and because I mean that on one level is.
But the fact that he's
to get you to keep turning the pages. I mean that's what writing a book is about. I mean,
I never had trouble turning your pages. Never. It was just easy. Easy. I mean, and that's to me, that's a sign of a good writer. Something where you can just get right into the book. I remember Dick Francis saying one time that he always killed his character. There was always a murder, like on the first couple pages of every one of his books. And I used to think, wow, that's what getting people right into the story.
Well, Dick Francis is a great example of maybe not the greatest prose stylist of all time, and not the most nuanced books, but he absolutely knew how to tell a story, and you pick up one of his books and he'll get you invested, which is that's a
so what
that's bottom line, right?
I'm curious, when you first handed in this book to Morrow, I don't know who your editor is, and Morrow, what did they say about it? Because I can only imagine they were very excited about it.
He was. So I work, my agent is pretty editorial, so he sees stuff a lot. He usually checks in and reads the sort of first half and, wants to see how it's going and offers suggestions, and then he kind of leaves me alone and I write the second half, and then he sends it off to the editor, and that's actually that's a little bit of a nerve-wracking time. I mean, or it was for me on this last one because I had a two-book deal, and I got the two-book deal based on the first book, so I knew editor like the first book, but then you hope you can deliver something that he likes for the second book. But yeah, no, he had nothing. He had great things to say about it, so I felt good. But you know, you have moments of doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess there's always that. I mean, with writers have very delicate egos to begin with, don't they? But at the same time,
I don't know. Yeah, they do. But why more of them don't have thick skin? I don't know, because I don't. You know, you put yourself out there. You know, people can say what they want, especially nowadays. It's like all this comment board. So, you know, my book came out on Tuesday, and I try and limit the amount of time. You know, I kind of go on Amazon like just once a day for like a couple minutes, just check and see how many people are, what people are saying about the book.
Which is cool. That's a cool thing to do. Now, are you doing a book tour for this?
No, I'm not doing a traditional book tour where I'm going stop to stop, but I am doing.
Don't you have this? Don't you have a? I mean, if I were you, I'd be like going to every bookstore I could get my. And just telling people about it. I mean, I love to go in. To me, I love to go in a bookstore and talk to people. I love that. I absolutely love to recommend books in bookstores. I've actually worked in bookstores and done that, which was a lot of fun. But
yeah.
But to be able to do that, I remember I went to this books thing they have in D.C. What do they call it? I can't remember. They have it right on the mall. I can't.
Oh,
remember.
Is it a?
Yeah, they do it every year in D.C., and I can't remember.
Oh, it's a book festival or something?
Yeah, it's the National Book Festival. And there was an author that I really loved, and I sat in that room, and just everybody that walked by, I told them about his books. And it was so much fun. I mean, I had
a publicist.
I should have been. And there's this big stack of books, and I'm telling people to read this author, you know, and it was so much fun. But this is the kind of book I could do that with and tell people, you know, you got to read this book. You know, you just have to just sit down and get into it. Once you start reading it, you'll definitely get into the story.
Yeah.
Because it's got everything. I mean, people love soap operas. It's got a soap opera-ish element to it.
Yeah.
It's got intrigue, it's got mystery, you know, it's got things that are happening. You know, the dialogue is wonderful, and there's so much about this book that's good.
Oh.
And people may be thinking now, well, he's just saying that because he's interviewing him. No, I really love this book. That's why we're doing the interview. So, you know, that's how I feel. Now, how is everybody else going to feel? Yeah, we'll have to see. But,
right, exactly.
But what, I mean, what this is the perfect book club book.
Yeah. It might be. I, you know, I've never been involved in a book club, although I went for Girl with a Clock for Heart, I went and sat in on a, I was a guest of honor at like a book club that did my book, and I answered questions for them. It was actually a lot of fun. But I guess it's a good book club book because you can kind of discuss certain.
Except when you get that one person, and I had, it was in a book club one time, and we invited the author, and we were all sitting around talking about this book. And he opened up his notebook and he started to, detail by detail, the little things he didn't like about the book right in front of her. It was the most embarrassing experience I think I've ever been through.
Oh, one of the book club members did it in front of the author?
Oh, yeah. Every little detail that he thought was wrong with the book. And we were all so horrified, we didn't know what to, you know, we had no idea he was going to do that. But he did it, and she became a huge author after that. So it didn't matter. It didn't affect her career. But it had to be. You can imagine what it did to her.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, how would that feel? Of course, you can pick apart any book and say, well, this is ridiculous, or this is ridiculous. But
especially since she was kind of trapped there as a guest.
Right. Yeah, what are you going to do? Get up and walk away? it just doesn't work. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? I mean, that stuff happens, right? I mean, you just have to try and take the high road. Don't argue back, but I don't know. You know, it's the same thing. Some authors now, and I think it's a big mistake, but, you know, if they get a bad comment.
And the great thing is, if anybody wants to read this book, can email you, and you'll actually respond to them, which is amazing to me. I mean, a lot of authors, you write to them, and you never hear from them.
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter. I mean, I suspect it's a matter of busyness. Since I've only been a published author for just over a year, I respond to everyone who writes me, and if someone asked me, you know, like the book club called me up and said, do you want to come and join us? And I just say yes to everything. because I feel honored, and I don't know how long this will last, and I feel like, you know, until there comes a time when I'm too, like, my schedule's too filled up and I need to get writing done, like, why wouldn't I say, why wouldn't I agree or respond?
Exactly.
I mean, obviously Stephen King can't, like, you know, can't respond to fans.
Can you imagine being in a book club with Stephen King? I mean, I'd go out of my mind with excitement. I wouldn't even know where to begin, you know. To be able to talk to him, to be able to have a conversation with him would make my whole life, you know. He's such an unusual author. I mean, there's nobody like him.
He's just one of the all-time greats. I really totally believe that in 100 years or 200 years, like, he's going to be remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the literary novels that get celebrated in and out of a year, and I'm nothing against those, but, like, they'll be forgotten. And he'll be around. He'll be like an Edgar Allan Poe. Like, just people will keep reading him.
Now, what did Publishers Weekly say about this book? I'm curious. I mean, what kind of reviews have you gotten them on it?
Publishers Weekly was great. It was a starred review, and it was really nice. And then I got... I mean, no bad reviews yet or anything like that. I got a great review from a Dallas or Fort Worth newspaper, which was really, really nice.
And as we said, Entertainment Weekly raved about it, too. So, I mean...
Yeah, although, I don't know if they'll do a review. That was, like, more of a preview.
Yeah, why won't they do a review? They have to after they said such nice things. But you'd think they'd have to do it. I
would think so. I don't know.
I haven't got my new copy. I'll get my new copy probably this weekend, so I'll be anxious to see if it's in there.
Yeah, me too.
They usually do. Once they put that, you know, when they have, like, say nice things about it, usually follow through with a review. But
I would think so. I was kind of hoping. I mean, I haven't heard anything, but so there's been some good reviews, and also, you know, people on Goodreads have liked it. So, you know, I feel good. I feel good about the book. So
you're in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
Right now.
Outside of Boston, yeah.
I know they had, I don't know, what kind of bookstores do they have in your area? I mean, what, just Barnes & Nobles? Or are there a lot of independents?
There's an indie right near me in Cambridge called Porter Square Books, which has opened up about 3-4 years ago, and it's doing great.
Do they know about you?
Yeah, they do. And in fact, I'm going to walk down, and I haven't done it yet this week, just because you can barely walk around up here because of the snow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to walk down there maybe today and see if they have books in or if they want me to sign them and check in with them. But then there's a couple bookstores in Harvard Square. There's still the Harvard bookstore, and there's the Coop in Harvard Square, which is a Barnes & Noble, actually. But And then there's a good indie in Brookline called Brookline Booksmith, and I'm doing a reading there next week on Tuesday night. And yeah, so there's a few good bookstores. I mean, a few have survived the Amazon.
And I just love the title. I mean, your titles are so interesting. I can't wait to see what you come up with next. I mean, you've got two really interesting ones. And are the titles hard for you?
Well, the first one wasn't, because it just kind of came out of the dialogue, and then
right.
It never got changed. This one was really difficult.
Why was it difficult? I mean, is it just a matter of...
I had a title that my editor didn't like. And then we worked on coming up with a new title, and I just kept throwing suggestions after suggestions, and I kept kind of, you know, and then I was like, oh, maybe The Killing Kind, and it turns out that's a book that just came out, so, you know, I didn't use that, and then it kind of came into my head, like, The Kind Worth Killing, and I was like, oh, it really fits with the theme of the book. And then I was worried it was kind of a hard title to remember. I don't know. We went through so many different possible titles, and it was kind of...
So do you think infidelity will be a subject in all of your books? No hesitation there. No.
Well, I'm thinking about my next book, and it's not, so no. But, I mean,
It's like with Harlan Coben. All of his books seem to have something to do with pictures. There's always pictures in his books.
Oh, really?
I don't know what it is. Either computer pictures or pictures of people years ago. There's a theme in his books. I mean, I think I've read almost all his books. I mean,
yeah.
The last one I couldn't get into. I don't know why. He'll kill me if he hears me say that, but I hope he doesn't hear me. But it just seems that every book has something to do with a picture. And it's interesting the way he does that. I think pictures make for great stories. I mean, we look at a picture, we look at a painting, and we think, well, what's the story behind that painting?
Right.
Or, I mean, it just starts every kind of thought in your head as to what is behind that. And what is that picture? What does it mean? When we look on the internet, it's just full of pictures now. People posting Facebook stuff, and
yeah, that's it's interesting. It's really, I never thought of that with him, and I've read a bunch of his books. But yeah, you're right. But it is a powerful thing, like especially just like a single picture or something that intrigues someone and gets.
But I miss his funny dialogue in the Mylon Bolitar series. That really back and forth. Funny dialogue stuff that he and Wynn have in the books. I know you've read them, so and it's just like, and they have, sometimes they'll talk about Batman villains or things like that. They're totally ridiculous things that are so funny that we can all relate to.
Yeah, no, he's great at dialogue.
But dialogue to me is so difficult. I mean, you can write dialogue that really zings, and then you can write dialogue that's boring.
Right, dialogue is hard.
Back and forth. I mean, it's that back and forth kind of thing. And I'm trying to think. There's an author. It's the guy who wrote L.A. Confidential, James Ellroy, who writes nothing but dialogue in his books. I mean, it's all dialogue. And it's like, I don't know. Would that get tiresome after a while?
I know some writers feel incredibly comfortable with dialogue. That in a sense, when you're in dialogue, it's just like you're kind of running on someone else's steam in a way. Like, so you just think to yourself, like, okay, this character says this. What's the other character going to say back? And then you're like, well, he'd say this, and you write it. And then this person would say this, and then suddenly, you know, you've written two pages, and suddenly you have to describe a room, and that's what's like, ugh, you know, I got to describe where they're walking or whatever. I like doing both, but dialogue can kind of, sometimes when you're writing dialogue, time flies. Like, it just, you get involved in it.
Well, what with The Kind Worth Killing, I was thinking to myself, how the heck is this book going to end? I have no idea how it's going to end up. And that was what was driving me to read the rest of the book. I had to know how it was going to end. It's like doing a puzzle. You have to finish the puzzle or you can't go on with your day, you know?
Yeah, that's good.
And that's exactly how I felt about this book. And I want to feel that way about all your books. So I got to read the one you wrote already. I think I was in Wegmans, of all places. And I think I saw the girl book.
It's just out in paperback.
So when will you finish your next book, do you think?
Probably not till the fall. And probably, like, so these books came out a year apart.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the next one would come out.
I mean, do you see, the two books you've written, do you see one as being better than the other, or do you see them as equal?
I do. I like this new one better.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I do. I just...
Well, of the three, the girl book and I keep forgetting the name of the title. The Clock for a Heart. You're right. Your books are hard to remember the titles of for some reason because they're complex titles. They're not like Gone Girl. Everybody remembers that title. But of the three, this new one's your favorite?
No. Of the two, The Kind Worth Killing, the one that just came out I prefer. And the third one, the one I'm working on now, I'm not far enough in to.
To know.
But but I did feel like The Kind Worth Killing was, I don't know, I thought it was sort of a little more complex and psychological. It was more interesting to me, although The Girl with a Clock for a Heart I also got tired of it just because I promoted it for a year. I got a little sick of it, which I never... thought about, but you know, you end up doing a lot of talking about it. But it was the best book I could write at that time, and I feel proud of it. And it's the book that got me published, and I really like the
got you on the map there.
Primary story behind it. But for whatever reason, right now, if I had to tell someone to read one of them, I would pick the new one.
I would too. I'm absolutely, because it's the only one I've read.
So that would be an easy one.
it's not like there's a choice yet, but the title of the first one intrigues me no end, so I'm going to have to read it at some point. just because I like your writing style. I can't wait to see what you read. Well, we have to let you go. I think you have to get some writing done. So
yeah, we've got to do a little writing. Well, thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, the book again is called The Kind Worth Killing by Peter Swanson, and it's out from Morrow. And I assume it's an e-book too, right?
It is, yes.
And it's in all your bookstores and Amazon, wherever you want to buy it from. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.